Good morning and welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists here in Philadelphia. The United Lodge of Theosophists is an association of students who are independently devoted to the cause of Theosophy. And the Lodge regards as Theosophists all those who are engaged in the true service of humanity. What holds this association together is a similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching. Therefore, there's no need for constitution, bylaws, or officers. The aim is to place before the public the teachings of Theosophy as recorded in the writings of H.P. Blavatsky and William Hugh Judge. And the purpose by doing that is to afford to each and all the opportunity to gain a truer realization of the self and a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. How do we do this? We do this by a method of impersonality that avoids dissensions and differences of opinion, but rather focuses on a understanding and application of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of Theosophy. So part of our mission as a ULT is to disseminate the ideas of Theosophy, but also to promulgate the idea that real unity does not depend on any outer form, but is the outcome of an inner similarity of aim, purpose, teaching. So in order to accomplish this here in Philadelphia, as we are an independent center of theosophical work, we hold two weekly meetings. On Wednesday evenings, we have a study class in the Ocean of Theosophy. And this coming Wednesday, we begin our study of the principles of the human being with a consideration of the physical body and life. Now that class begins promptly at 7:30 and goes until 8:30. Now on Sunday mornings, from 11 to 12, we have a more formalized presentation of the philosophy, either in the format of a panel, such as we will have today, a short forum talk, or a longer lecture on one of the practical aspects of the philosophy. The umbrella topic for this coming month of December relates to cycles of life, and our subject for next Sunday will be Between Two Lives, in other words, a consideration of the after-death states. In addition to these opportunities for us to learn together, there is a library on the first floor here, and the library is open on Wednesday evenings from 5:15 till 7:15 before the class. You'll find a student there to help you find particular reference materials you're looking for. It's a wonderful opportunity to study the part for the night or read the reference if you haven't done so already. So it is a reference library, not a lending library. If you would like to study on your own, there are two opportunities available. One is you can purchase the books directly yourself at cost of publication and shipping. There is no profit to be made from these books, and they are in the form of straight-line theosophical literature, books, pamphlets, and magazines. They are displayed on the book table in the center of the building here on the first floor. And the opportunity to purchase those books, examine those books, is before and after meetings and during library hours. Now, a second way is to go to the Philadelphia ULT website, which is announced on our periodical, and there you will find our activities listed, as well as an opportunity to link to the important theosophical literature so you can study on your own. So this morning, we are finishing up with a consideration of the synthesis of science and religion. And we've looked at that from various points of view. And so today we're going to have a panel on a subject which initially doesn't seem to have too much religious relevance, seems to be more scientific, but as we go along, we hope you see that they are two aspects of the same presentation. And so we will begin with a brief presentation of the law of cycles, and then when that's done, we'll have a brief presentation on working with cycles, or the law of cycles.
So we start off with the law of cycles. For most of us, students are familiar. We're talking about one of the propositions from the three fundamentals of the philosophy of theosophy that underlies all of the philosophy is that second fundamental, which is dealing with the idea of cycles. Now, the word cycle comes to us from the Greeks in meaning circle. But when we say circle, we don't definitely mean a complete round circle, because circles can be into, if we think of spiral ideas, a crossing to a higher or a lower level, is an overlapping type of thing. And that second fundamental of the law of periodicity, which we call it, it's the motion of that one divine principle of all life, that first fundamental. So it is an understanding that we will in time look into deeper. And if we think about it, it seems impossible to even conceive of anything that without a cause, and that you're going to get an effect, no matter whatever what we do, how we think, how we act, from the cause will come an effect. And with this in mind, we have the understanding that major cycles usually overlap one another. There's no exact point within a cycle where you can say it ends or begins and the old one ends. It's an overlapping, it's a natural. Again, it's back to that spiral idea of spiraling up or down, that crossing over. So that in conjunction with the idea of the basis for the cycles, we're told in the philosophy, and which is part of the ancient philosophy, they all agree, the basis of it is in the vibrations. Now, whether it be dealing with cycles for men, races, planets, the universe, the cosmos, it's ruled by that absolute immutable law of cycles. And that comes through. Now, in accordance with this, which is evolutionary process of life, are carried forwards. So also known as the law of, we can think of as rhythm, and as stated prior, periodicity. It's a motion, it's a force. Now, we see this in the law evident in such natural phenomena that we can think of. So we're all familiar with day and night, sunrise, sunset, the ebb and flow of the tides. It's even affecting us in our physical bodies when we speak about the contractions and expansion of the heartbeat within us. There is a rhythmic principle that we can see. And for man, the whole cycle, that cycle of youth, birth, youth, manhood, old age, death, again, followed in due time by another birth. And with it brings it a new life cycle. So we're familiar with cycles. We maybe have not really taken a depth into studying them and understanding them or how we're grooved in them. But it is something that is a very vast part of not only our life and this planet and the universe, but we're all part of it together. And it's that spiral idea of ascending or descending, depending on how one acts within the cycle. It's an inherent blending, we could say, with the law of ethical causation, morals. How do we set what we think is proper, is harmonious with the all, because we are part of the all. Every one of us is an aspect of the all. So there have been great periods of time that we've talked about. We will be studying shortly, when we get to that chapter, not too shortly, about this vast period of time. And when we speak of that, we speak of the great Manvantara that each and every one of us are in, that we have an understanding of that. They speak of, we will use the English terms, the Golden Age, the Silver Age, the Bronze Age, and the Iron Age. We, right now, in our time of development and evolution, are in the Iron Age. We can say one thing in this part for us that's good is that in this age, it's one of the shorter ages, and we could probably have more progress in this age because it's moving at a faster speed and it's also shorter. So with these great ages, after we have the large cycle of each group, after the Iron Age, what comes? The Golden Age again. So when we look at it in this way, as it expands, there are periods and different ages within this vast period that we can gain knowledge, gain understanding, gain balance, gain harmony, or we can just slide off to the side. We're only part of it because we are in a way connected also with the lower kingdoms. We are the ones that are propelling the lower kingdoms for greater ages of parts of units of intelligence to move up the ladder. We're sort of the kingpin where we are now. So if we take this in mind, that reincarnation, cycles, karma, all three work together because it is through our karma that promotes and develops our cycles, and it's through reincarnation that we're brought back over and over again to gain some knowledge, to gain some lesson, to gain that balance. And if we get to look at it on a closer level, we can look at the idea of a habit. It's a habitual, almost involuntary, as a result of frequent repetition, doing something over and over again. So it does touch us, but it also touches within us that spiritual nature within us. We have a few quotes that we wanted to bring up to help you understand, hopefully, the rest of this discussion. From the Book of Zan, which is the source of the Theosophical teachings, and it's from stanza one. This is to give you a vastness of what periods. Time was not, for it lay asleep in the infinite bosom of duration, as there was no consciousness existed. So when we look at it this way, it makes us, could possibly make us feel humble to be able to even develop in this area. And then it's thus in the eternity of time, cycles of man, whether it's manifested or non-manifested, will occur, and these periods are of immense duration, vast periods of activity and rest. And Mr. Judge tells us, all are cycles of destiny. We make our own destiny. We fix it for ourselves. And we fix for ourselves. That hole we fall into is the hole we dug. That is our destiny. So that gives us a basic idea of we can gain a lot in these great vast cycles. We can become a help in it, as a help to humanity, as an understanding of universal brotherhood is a fact in nature, and we're all here to learn. It's the school of life, and we go through situations. Some situations, we just go through them. We don't feel high or low. We just do it because we do it. Other situations get caught up within us, and it bothers us, and we fall backwards, we feel unsure of ourselves. So the impressions that we give and the impressions that we take in are going to make choices of what cycles are going to do for us. Now at this point, now that we sort of get an idea, that's what the basis is from. Now we'll look at the idea, well, how do we work within, quote, the cycles?
We're sure you're all familiar with Ecclesiastes chapter 3 in the Bible that begins with these words, to everything there is a season and a time to every purpose under the heaven, a time to be born, a time to die, and so forth, and it goes on for 8 more verses in that regard. However, that's just the preliminary poetic foundation for the real message in the chapter, which is in the remaining 14 verses, which you may not be familiar with, but you should study. And in there, the sage says, recognizing this to be true, there is a unity of life. All are exposed to the same law. What is occurring now has occurred in the past, and the past will come back to occur in the future. It's an invariable law that cannot be turned aside. We need not judge another, because that law will take care each unto their own deserts. Iniquity will be punished according to that law. There is a path of evolution by which spirit may ascend upward or downward. So all human being needs to do is rejoice and focus on the virtuous performance of their responsibilities. That's a lot. That's theosophy in 14 verses. But that's also the religious perspective of working with the law of cycles. But this is the synthesis of science and religion, so we want to look at the science behind that inspiring chapter from the Bible. So we have had it established that the law of cycles pervades every department of nature, visible, that which we can see with our eyes, and invisible, that which we can perceive with our mind and heart. It influences every being in every kingdom of nature, including the human being. However, the human being is unique among all beings in its capacity for self-conscious perception and free will. But it is also the human being that is intimately connected with every department of nature, is in fact a microcosm or a small mirror of the macrocosmic universe. And therefore, the human being is influenced by natural cycles belonging to all the departments and kingdoms of nature, as well as those cycles that he has or she has generated through his or her own self-induced and self-devised thought, feeling, and behavior. As human beings are intimately interconnected with one another, they generate individually and collectively and experience individually and collectively the periodic return and impact of individual, family, national, and even larger collective cycles. So human beings cannot help being influenced by and to a certain degree governed by cycles operating on their physical, psychic, mental, moral, and even spiritual natures. However, they are free to choose if and how they will work with the cycles, and also if and how they will cope with cycles. So as every being in all the different kingdoms of nature is alive, conscious, intelligent in some degree, appropriate to its nature and capacities, every being is impressionable. So human beings, being impressionable, feel the impact of cycles as a returning of impression that sways the human being to act in one way or another and increases or decreases the power to act in one way or another. Recognizing this operation of cyclic law in nature is the key to working intelligently and purposely with the law of cycles. Let me repeat that. Recognizing that we are constantly experiencing the return of cyclic impressions that sway us to act or increase us or decrease the power to act in certain ways is key to working purposely and intelligently with the law of cycles. Impressions return like a rising and falling tide. Some return daily, some return weekly, some return monthly, some return seasonally, yearly, and in all the stages of our life. And perhaps in our discussion, we'll get into some of the details, but it's important to become familiar with the way we feel individually these cyclic return of impressions in these periods of time. And as they return, thinking of the idea of a tide and the coming, going in and out, and how a ship will take advantage of the tide. We can take advantage of the tide of return of impression and do as the very ancient anonymous saying goes, sow an act and you reap a habit. Sow a habit and you reap a character. Sow a character and you reap a destiny. So cycles are the way we do that, because we act in a certain way, it creates an impression, and it comes back again, and we can continue to build on that. Now, some cycles, whether they're natural or self-induced, have to run their course before a new one can be firmly established. In which case, it's not so much a matter of working with cycles as it is coping with cycles. So that's the other part of the scientific way of coping, because we know we can have a very irrational, passionate way of coping with cycles, which isn't really coping at all. We can get elated when things come back that we like, or depressed when and angry when things come back that frustrate us. But that's not really approaching it from an intelligent, purposeful, and even scientific, or as we've seen, religious point of view. So how do we try to cope with cycles effectively as personalities when these impressions come back to? And well, we can return to the biblical approach, recognizing that this is a law of life, and as impressions come back to ourselves or we see them in other people, not to condemn others, to mind our own business, to perform our own duties in life, let that cyclic law take care of itself, and focus on the virtues, doing the best we can in accordance as we understand our lives in the present. Because as it says in Ecclesiastes, what we're doing now will come again in the future, and what we've done in the past will invariably come again and be part of our present. We cannot escape that law, nor can any other being in nature. But here in Theosophy, we have the opportunity to cope with cycles even above the approach of the personality as commonly taught in the ethics and virtues of the various religions. We can look at them impersonally, in which we can take any cycle, good or bad, and not just cope with it, but take whatever it is and transform it into an opportunity to grow in spiritual strength and spiritual wisdom, by recognition that we are immortal souls or immortal individualities on a pilgrimage throughout many lifetimes, as was mentioned. And in this pilgrimage, we are governed by the law of reincarnation and karma, which are just two aspects of this universal law of cycles operative in our life. And if we can do that, if we can maintain this higher impersonal perspective on cycles as they come, whether it be good or bad, we can extract a lesson from it. Not just cope with the good or bad impression, but extract a lesson. And that lesson will make us even stronger and wiser in our ability to work and cope with it when that impression comes again in the future. So we offer this by way of introduction, and if time allows, might even refer to some of the direct quotes from Ecclesiastes. Yes?
Well, we sat and looked at a clock on the wall in our den and said, wow, if that clock could talk, we might learn something. Because it seems that it moves forward, but when you look inside, it's a lot of back and forward motion in that clock. Can we see something like that in our personal lives daily?
So to rephrase the question, can we see a larger pattern in the back and forth, or the constant changing and movement in our lives?
And just like that clock, if we could talk, it could talk to you.
Well, what does the clock teach us? Yes?
It helps us to measure our own cycles.
It helps us to measure circles, certain things that we expect to do under cyclic law. So it teaches a certain order into our lives. Mr. Judge had an interesting quote. He says, very often when we look at our clock or our watch, we are looking to see what time it is not, rather than what time it is. Because we know at certain times, certain duties or responsibilities come to us. So it does teach us to attend to our responsibilities and to establish a certain order in our lives. And that can be very practical to us, because if we want to take advantage and work with the law of cycles, we want to work like the clock does, in a sense that at certain times, if we want to develop, say, the power to meditate or to exercise or any kind of capacity, if we do it at the same time every day, we train the cyclic patterns in our lives to peak and come back and be reinforced at that time. That's pretty much the way hunger works. You eat approximately the same time every day. And what happens at certain times, even without having a clock, around 11 o'clock, you'll start to feel hungry. And those of us who have trained ourselves to have regular waking and sleeping cycles know they can go to bed and wake up pretty much without an alarm clock, approximately the same time every day. There's a certain internal rhythm. So we can work with cycles and learn that lesson from the clock.
Is the most powerful? Is the time, chronological time, or the pattern of the cycle? Which is almost like a chicken and the egg question. Which is the stronger, time or the cycle?
We would think the cycle. Because if we look at the idea that we're here to learn, there are lessons to be learned. There's some importance of a reoccurrence. It's always not negative. It can be positive. It can be something we have to learn. So it would seem to us, it would be, this cycles back again. I'm doing this again. What am I doing? How many situations have we been into where we've been working on something and it's never coming out right, Linga? What am I doing wrong? Where am I, what am I forgetting, or what don't I know? When we start to ask these questions, that's when we can delve into the situation more and be a help of learning why it keeps happening over and over again. And yet it can be also on a positive note that we can be able to express this feeling. This feeling of understanding, of balance. So it could be either way.
We can also look at the point of view of cycles are more important than time, because cycles are real to the extent that they are manifestations of the operation of universal law, whereas time is relative. Right. And as the reading from the Book of Zan suggested, time does not exist unless there is a conscious being to perceive it. And even our understanding of the past, present, and future depends on our awareness of memories, our anticipation of things that will happen in the future. And we know the passage of time, which seems to, the present time can seem to be very long or very short, depending on the state of mood or consciousness or thought or activity we're engaged in. And time on Earth, because it's based on a certain rotation, would be different than time measured on the Moon or Jupiter or one of the other planets. So time itself is relative, the duration of time. But a cycle coming back is the operation of a law in nature, the universal sensitivity and intelligence of life, the recurrence of those impressions and experiences and the operation of universal law.
There was a comment made that during this age that we live in now, it seems to be going faster. Now, is that a perception, or is it just this? Our consciousness has become more and more familiar with the material world, and experiences just seem to build up, and time seems to go much faster. Is that what is happening during this cycle? Is time going faster? I mean, is the cycle moving faster, or is just our conscious awareness becoming greater? And so it seems as if it's going faster.
Well, briefly, if you think about it, it's one of the shortest cycles, the Iron Age, the Kali Yuga, as it's called. But yet more can be done in this age than any other because of the repetition that we can give it and the repetition it has in its own workings.
So we might say this age, we say, is a faster moving age because effect follows cause. The phenomena follows the hidden generating cause much quicker than it does in a slower age. So we seem to be living in faster moving times. But in our individual lives, there are times when time seems to move quickly and when it seems to move slowly. And sometimes it's painfully slowly and sometimes it's pleasantly slowly. It depends a lot on our state of mind that we're in. So this then, we're told, time has to do with the succession of events passing through our mind that we witness seems to create the illusion of time passing. The quicker the succession of events, the quicker time seems to be moving. And so it gives us an idea, how do we slow down time? Well, we can slow down, or at least our perception of time, by slowing down our thoughts. Now, letting our minds jump around to memories and fears and this and that, but bringing it back to a few eternal truths, living it in the now. And in that way, time seems to have that rushing effect on us. We transcend, or we become masters of time, if you will, rather than its victim.
Yes?
Well, it seems to be two kinds of time. There's the external time that's measured by the clock. You know, 60 minutes to the hour, 24 hours to the day as we count. And then there's the personal time. And as we perceive time, as we start as children, time is very, very slow. And then there comes this period when everything goes so fast. And so that the personal time is very variable. And so how do we deal with that?
How do you deal with personal time? How do you work with that cycle of leisure?
Yeah. That's a good point. No, how do you deal? Let's think about it. If you could wake up one day and say, I really have nothing that I'm obligated to do today. I could do whatever I want or not do anything all day. That feeling of having some command of what you're going to do with yourself and the choices that you might make. It might be just staying in bed all day, reading, maybe working on a puzzle or something, Or it might be you want to get out in nature, which is very good for all of us because we can learn a lot from nature if we get out into nature, get out in that fresh air, get out away from all the trauma that we see around us, and have a peaceful time of just enjoying life as it is without any obligations put upon us. So that's one way of looking at it.
So how many here thought Thanksgiving went quicker for them as a day? Thursday was a quicker day for them than usual. How many people felt it went slower? Quicker or slower?
Slower.
It went slower. Anybody think it went quicker? Went quicker. Now, in your observations of whether it went quicker, did it have to anything to do with the activities or the responsibilities or the things you had to do that day? Mm. Yes?
And it went slower because of things I had to do that day.
Were more or less? Were there more things? More things. So it seemed to go slower. Okay. You said it went quicker?
We think it went quicker for us because of all the things that we did that day.
Gee whiz,
so
Scott.
How many things you do that day has nothing to do. So whether it's a slower or quicker day has nothing to do with the number of things but with your attitude. Now, there are some people who felt that it went slower because they didn't have that many things to do. They could sleep late, they could watch TV, they could get on, you know, they didn't have the constant rush to have to get to work and everything. They could just take it easy and read, and it just seemed like they lived through half the day and it was only 1 o'clock, you know? And then they had a whole another day. It just kept going on because there didn't seem to be as many demands on them. So we think key to working with the cycle here is whether, if we want to free ourselves from the personal time and how it affects to us, is what is our attitude towards the things we have to do? And, you know, if we can approach it, impersonally, from the perspective of the perceiver, or we approach it from the perspective of duty, of virtue. We can try either way we want to and see what is the best way for us to manage the time so we are not stressed out. Because that's really what the key is, how to free ourselves from the stress aspect of time that make personal time that makes us feel so rushed. Yes.
But isn't that the purpose or one of the reasons why we need to meditate is to capture that moment and that the less opportunity we have to be quiet and to listen or to observe what's going on, the more stressed we become, the more, you know, the world around us seems to be so busy. And so we would think that concentration and meditation would be a very integral part of our own sanity. Mm-hmm. You know, and what's real and what's not real, and what is time and what is not time.
So of quieting the mind and so forth.
We were wondering, during your Thanksgiving time with family and quote friends, how much of it was a duty and how much was it an enjoyment? Our whole attitude, you know, that idea of acts of kindness, because sometimes you hear really dreadful stories coming from friends about what they went through on this supposedly thankful, happy day, and all families are pulled together. And then others, they're really sad that it's over with, and now all the friends and relatives are all gone. But during the time, they really enjoyed it. So we sometimes wonder, it takes a lot to make yourself able to do acts of kindness in situations where there's a lot of turmoil, for instance.
In the back, yes.
But what if we treated each day, whether we're at leisure with no obligations or we're booked to the max with obligations, what if we set up cycles where our focus in the morning is on spirituality and universal principles and concepts? How would that change the course of a frenetic day or a leisurely day? Would there be any difference at all?
Well, the beginning of the cycle, as was said, begins with a keynote or a vibration. And we establish that vibration at the beginning of the cycle by our thinking and feeling. It is said that in the cyclic path of human evolution through various stages, there are wise beings that come among us and teach and establish a certain cycle or vibration through their teaching that will last through the entire cycle of human development as an uplifting benefit. But that's a general law. The evolution of this earth was established in the beginning through a vibration. We can take advantage of the vibration when we first wake up, when the sun, the first appearance of the sun, when the energies are strong and we begin to wake up, we can establish a vibration or current of thought that will become the cyclic tone for that day, and it will go stronger. How about at the beginning of a week for us? We can set a tone. Now, Monday does not have to be so blue if Sunday is a little more sunny. Okay. Well, we can establish and it's interesting that throughout the world, various religions around this time of the week use this as a day for gathering spiritual energies and reflection as part of the beginning of the week. So how about the same way can be done as the beginning of a year? We're coming up to the beginning of a new year, and we will establish certain energies as we see in the life for the year to come. So that's a general law in nature that we can affect the way the cycle will appear to us by focusing all the most important impulse at the very beginning of the cycle.
That's a very good point that was brought up also, because we were thinking, when we think about this philosophy and how ancient it is and how far back beyond historical times it goes, that there are beings that have lived through what we're going through now and have gained control of their lives and lives and lives, that they're expressing these teachings are brought forward again, but that there are those that have been through this and know what we're going through and let us know you too can be ones to be able to help and teach others in time. But the fact that there have been great beings that are around and keeping an eye on this whole great vast evolution that we're going through and can see the ups and the downs we're going through. But if we look at the fact, if they've done it and we're all part of the same, we have the ability in some lifetime to be able to express and understand all the laws of nature. And that's something to think about, that there are those who have been through this and have left all these signs and directions of what has been and what can be. And that should give us some sort of an effort to understand Who's in control? Is it the situation? Or is it I, that true I, that observer within us, that can see from back to forward? No matter what we go through, there's always that part of our nature that can see. They're letting us know that that part of our nature can know all there is to know in any one period of time, to be able to express it in a living lifetime. Yes.
Well, we, I don't know.
I'm tired. It's you doing it.
I think there are two kinds of cycles. There are cycles that are like the seasons, night and day. They are natural cycles that we have no control over.
True.
But then there are cycles that we can set for ourselves. That's my cycle of how I organize my week, how I organize my day. If I have a job, the job may do some of that for me. But like if you are retired, you sort of set your own cycles.
Mm.
And it's interesting how that happens. I mean, you have your meal times, and then you set certain times. Like I find I have to meditate at the same time every day. And if I don't do that, my cycles are out of whack.
True. Once you're in a cycle like that, it's something that you really need to do. You've got to keep it up. And if not, it'll slap you back to try to get your attention.
It's also important to try and keep it at a time.
Right.
To keep that time.
A routine, because again, that's a habit. And what's a habit? A reoccurrence of the same thing over and over. So it's building good habits.
We think the problem is not recognizing that there are two cycles, but knowing which one of those two cycles is affecting us now. And let me give an example for that. So we'll go back to Ecclesiastes, and it begins, "To everything there is a season and a time to every purpose under heaven." And then it goes on, "A time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance." So our weeping and our happiness, our mourning and our dancing, is that something that's in our own control, a cycle we can establish ourselves, or is that something that's going to overcome us and affect us whether we want it to or not? It's just part, like the seasons. We just have to deal with it. Yes?
We are the creators of our own life, so that how we react to it or the attitude that we have makes all the difference.
True, but sometimes under these cycles come naturally. The cycle of mourning is a very natural event. It seems to occur in people's lives under certain circumstances. The cycle of dancing. Is that something we're just going to go through depending on those circumstances, or can we mitigate them in some way or change them?
Okay. Well, these naturally occurring cycles in great nature, as well as those that are naturally occurring because we've given impress to them in past lives, as long as we hold the stand, I am experiencing this. I'm not that cycle, I'm not that dance, I'm not that sorrow, but I am experiencing this, and how can I uplift this for the other? If that's the perception and the centeredness, then we're not lost in the cycle at all.
That's a key point, that many of the things we call naturally occurring cycles in ourselves that we can't seem to control are really the results of previous action, and we have to take in that larger scope of reincarnation to see that. Yes.
What you're saying is that harmony in the physical terrain surroundings, our physical lives, and so forth, is another word for justice on the spiritual plane, because we are not subject to these cycles, and that when they come and reoccur, we become masters of what's taking place. It would seem that's the whole idea stated in the Declaration, more or less. Who's in control? We or the cycle?
Was there another contribution? Yes.
We were wondering whether or how or if the three gunas play into the cycles. Like, would mm-hmm. there be one guna that is predominant over a cycle as it comes and goes? Or within the cycle, do different gunas apply?
Interesting.
Well, we have to understand the idea with the gunas. They can be mixed. They can be all together at the same time. They can be at a separate extent. The fact that we go through these and use these in our everyday, practically, how we're affecting things, can make a big difference. But again, there's no stop and then start up and then stop and start up. They're intermeshed. They intermingle.
So there's no question in the Bhagavad Gita yeah. that cycles of gunas are a natural law in nature that
right.
no being can escape. They're experienced by all the kingdoms. And it even goes so far as to say that when one guna or one a quality is in the ascendance, the other two may be in abeyance, and they rise and fall like that. Having said that, the whole lesson of the Bhagavad Gita is learning how to cope and work with those cycles, which is a matter of individual expression. And we see that one can actually progress and move through the way they act over time, so that they become a person in which the sattva quality prevaileth and no longer the tamasic quality prevaileth. But that comes from the proper way to not be attached to the cycle, but cope and work with it when it comes.
Well, I can't tell how much time we have left.
There's another question.
Oh, good.
Okay, yeah.
Sitting here this morning and thinking about the cycle, which has given me a different perspective. They are dual, number one. They are dual.
Right.
They are often in opposition to one another, and they are sequential. One precedes the other. And it's the hint that's given to us in the Bible when it says, what is it, knocking it shall be opened, asking it shall be answered. One has to come before the other. It's not a haphazard thing. And it applies to everything that we do, even to the point of our walking, our movement. When you step and you put your weight on this foot, the other foot has to rise up and fall. And that constant cycle of moving like that is what gives us motion and allows us to walk. So it's not just something, a theory, some sort of universal theory. It is a practical application down to everything that we do, the food we eat, how we move, and how our bodies work, and how we ourselves, our minds work.
Yeah.
So it's really been a very illuminating one.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Well, we'd like to close. We had so many things that we were thinking would be excellent for closing. But now after the discussion, the way it's going, we'd like to close with us from the Bhagavad Gita. And this is Krishna speaking to Arjuna. It's our higher nature speaking to our daily nature, shall we say, that we think we live. I myself never was not, nor thou, nor all the princes of earth, nor shall we ever hereafter cease to be. as the Lord of this mortal frame experienced therein infancy, youth, and old age, so in future incarnations will it meet the same. One who is confirmed in this belief is not disturbed by anything that may come to pass. We think that's, in a way, what we're talking about, this idea of periodicity. It exists, and it will always exist, and it has existed, and we are part of it. So thank you very much for coming, and we're finished.
For now.
For now. For now. We're finished for now. Did you, oh, that little thing that says off, you did it.